Hi there. Welcome to the Agency Toolkit Podcast, a podcast where we discuss stories, strategies, and techniques to help you build a successful and profitable digital marketing agency. Our episodes contain inspiring conversations with CEOs and entrepreneurs and leave you with actionable tips, ideas, and strategies you can implement into your business today. We are happy to have you with us. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and get inspired.
Hey, Julia here. If you'd like to grow your agency with a new free traffic source, we've put together a free resource for you called the Agency Traffic Blueprint, which outlines how you can acquire free organic traffic for your agency's website using Powered by Marketing. You can get that at getrubyrobin.com/blueprint or check the description of this episode for the link. Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning into another episode of the Agency Toolkit Podcast. I am your host, Julia McLaughlin. And today I have with me Neil Steven, who is the founder of This Is Marketing. So I'm really excited to pick Neil's brain a little bit today. We're going to be talking a little bit about his journey of entrepreneurship and his story around starting and growing his agency. And then, you know, we'll chat a little bit about some challenges that he's had to overcome along the way as well. So thanks so much for joining us today, Neil.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. So to get started, I always ask my guests, you know, what really motivates or inspires you as an agency owner?
You know, we have a pretty clear motivation here. Our agency is located in Atlantic Canada, and the reality is that we are doomed by demographics here. And so we desperately need an influx of people. We need existing businesses that are here to be better, and we need more businesses to be here. And we need a lot more exports. So, you know, when we come to work in the morning, that's sort of our North Star is saying in every scenario, what can we do to help this client grow? You know, and it's less about, hey, let's make these sales targets and let's, you know, help pad bank accounts, which is nice and good and always important. Mm-hmm. But really it's more, you know, what can their growth enable them to do? You know, for the region, if they can grow by 15%, does that mean two new employees? Is that two new good jobs that are going to be around for a while? You know, if they can grow by 30%, is that 10 new jobs or, you know, what is it? And what impact can that have? You know? And so it's really fun work when you look at it through those lens, you know, that lens, sorry, it's just, it becomes something of a passion on a daily basis, you know, you really know why you're coming to work. And so when you have success, it's exciting because you just think of, you know, kids and you know, more equipment for their sports and, able to, you know, enroll in different things and people having jobs and families being more whole, you know, so that's really what we're about. There's lots of, different marketing companies out there, my goodness, but my understanding is, I guess that makes us a little bit unique. That's kind of our obsession. But it's why we started the agency, really. It was just that reality of the demographic challenges our region of the country faces.
Yeah.
It's just sort of this is where we want to apply our talents.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's really cool that you've really dialed in what that North Star is and how you want to just really help grow your local community and help those local families as much as possible. So, that's really cool.
We really do look at like the ability to communicate as rare. You know, we live in an age where there's a million different tools to allow you to communicate instantly, but still most people aren't very good at it. So if you're good at communicating, then you have a responsibility really to use that skill set in a way that doesn't just make you more whole or more, you know, financially stable or whatnot, but also serves a bigger purpose, you know. And I just think that's something that we need as communicators. And this is I imagine a lot of communicators are listening to this podcast. It's not something I personally don't hear enough of that. Like, you know, how can I use my skills for the greater good? Mm-hmm. And in our industry, you know, I think we need more of that.
Yeah. Love that. And so I'd love to know, you know, what drew you to digital marketing and what was that deciding factor to start your agency? Yeah. Talk a little bit about what, you know, how you started This Is Marketing.
Yeah. You know, it's hard to say something drew me to digital marketing. You know, I'm a digital native. I'm the first class of digital natives. I remember when Facebook came to Canada. I was studying at St. FX at the time, and I was involved in student government, and I did all the communications, and the finance guy within the student union, his nickname was Boston because he was from Boston. So not really that creative, but he kept talking about this thing called the Facebook. Mm-hmm. And we said, oh, okay, well, what is that? And he was lobbying Facebook to have our university be one of the first in Canada, because at that point it was just universities and colleges. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I was at St. FX at the time, St. FX University, and St. FX ended up being one of the first universities in Canada to get the Facebook. So for me, you know, like, and I think someone who's a bit older than me would listen to that and say, well, there was a lot of digital before that, man. And they're probably right. You know, they definitely are right, actually. But in terms of social and digital, it's sort of always been in the ecosystem for me. Like, that's what I breathe. It wasn't really a conscious choice. It was more of, certainly in the first several years, it was a lot of just teaching, helping people understand what any of this was. And so when the time came for me to sort of make some changes and start my own company, it wasn't a conscious choice to move into digital marketing. To me, it was just, if you're going to try to support smaller businesses, smaller, medium size even, if you're going to try to support that type of clientele and help them succeed, digital is your best option, you know, just in terms of testability and scale and your initial investment can be quite low, you know, which is really appealing to a client that's got a small budget and is a little bit nervous, right? So digital just checks a lot of boxes early on. Of course, you know, that was 8 years ago, almost 8 years ago now, and digital's just become more and more a key part of marketing across the board. And so it's at the center of everything we do, but we don't come to work and think of ourselves as digital people. We just come to work and think of ourselves as communicators and brand strategists who happen to use the digital mediums that proliferate. Is that the word? You know, they're everywhere. We just happen to use those tools, but it's, we really think about people first and humans and the way humans talk and communicate. And, then the platform comes after that for us, you know. That's sort of a bit of the backstory. You know, to me, I don't know a world that isn't digital. and honestly, the cool fun things for me are when we do billboards or when we do more traditional advertising, because it's, you know, when I was a kid, that's the type of stuff I saw. So to see it now when we do billboards, it's like, oh, there's a billboard that we made, and then the Facebook and Instagram and TikTok stuff, I don't even notice, honestly.
Yeah.
It's a little counterintuitive, but.
Yeah. So, you know, when you were first starting out, how did you connect with those first few clients? You know, how did you make those first few sales? Because mm-hmm. I'm really interested to learn, you know, how your strategy has evolved for, you know, generating leads as you've grown.
Sure. Yeah. I tell people that I started this company by accident, and I did. I didn't set out to say, oh, I'm going to start an ad agency. Like, that was never my thought. I never ever saw myself as an entrepreneur, frankly. But what happened is a friend said, hey, can you help me? I'm doing a startup. And it was a startup called Addo, ADDO. And it was kind of an interesting little thing he was doing. I said, oh, yeah, sure. So in the evenings, I helped him. And then he had a friend who also needed help. And then within 3 months, it was like, I guess I got to quit my job. I should just do this. I can pick
That's
my own
incredible. Matters. And,
yeah. So it was just sort of, you know, very word of mouth. I have a mentor that says, you know, from good stuff comes good stuff. And I tend to agree with that. Like, you just put the work in and the chips fall where they may. And you know, we've had wins and we've had losses too. But we just have always just focused on the work and the relationships and learning and listening. Mm-hmm. And once we sort of started the company, I say we, you know, I started it. My wife, who now is a full-on partner in the business and works full-time in the business, at the time was just, you know, I shouldn't say just, but was in her day-to-day life doing her job and would help me on the side. And when we started it, we kind of agreed, like, it's not hard to start a marketing company. The barriers to entry are low, frankly. Mm-hmm. Anyone can say they're a marketer. Mm-hmm. As I'm sure there are people who are listening that are, you know, annoyed by that too. Mm-hmm. 'Cause it's just so easy to say, oh yeah, I can do that. You know? So I kind of said at the start, let's not really tell anyone for 5 years. Mm-hmm. Let's just put our heads down and work.
And I like that strategy.
And work. And so we didn't even really promote the company at mm-hmm. all. I didn't go to networking. I didn't do anything. We just focused on the work. And, mm-hmm. And the one thing that I did in terms of outreach, I would just look for really bad marketing and then reach out to them. Just reach out. You know, it is Atlantic Canada, and we have clients across the country and some down into the Caribbean as well, mm-hmm. and the north too. So like, it's not all Atlantic Canada, but that was the easiest thing at the start. Just to see marketing that was clearly not working and was not inexpensive, right? So like they're buying out of home advertising, or they're doing these different tactics, and you're like, they're clearly spending money, but not well. And mm-hmm. then you find a way to have a chat, you know, and try to make it as organic as possible. And, you know, we never sell. Like, I don't get in a room and like try to sell. I just try to listen mm-hmm. and then match what I'm hearing to the solutions that I'm aware of. And 9 times out of 10, the client's like, that's perfect. That's exactly what we need. Can you do that? And we say, oh yeah, sure. We'll put a work plan together for you, you know? And that's usually how it goes. And it's been organic since mm-hmm. day one. I should say that like we turned 5, and that was kind of the goal, is like, let's get to 5 and then we'll start telling people. And we had actually saved a bunch of money to have kind of like a big party, a big coming out party almost. And mm-hmm. We were going to have that in April 2020. So that didn't
not plan. A great time to have a party.
No. And so, but we had so many small business clients at that point that it was really scary, actually, because, I mean, that whole time was scary, but we were really worried that this pandemic was just going to wipe them out. Mm-hmm. So what we started very early, like the week after everything shut down, basically, is I started a boot camp every day, 5 days a week, a Zoom boot camp that anyone could come to. And every day was just, I would hit on the news about like, here are the resources that are available. Here's what the federal government's doing. Here's the change. Here's how you have to look at this. You know, a lot of you don't even know how to update your Google My Business. So let's talk about that for 15 minutes, and I'll do screenshots and I'll show you mm-hmm. that type of stuff. And that was our first really telling people that we existed. The chamber got behind us here in Halifax. And so we that was ended up being our coming out party, is kind of helping people through the pandemic.
Yeah.
And it just began to snowball from there. That's a long answer to your question, but that's.
No, there's definitely some interesting things in there. And I think that's really, really interesting how you guys, you know, saw that opportunity and pivoted so quickly. You know, you looked at it as like, how can I be helping these business owners who are in crisis right now? And I think because you were able to pivot so quickly, I'm sure it, you know, benefited your company in the long run, like crazy.
Yeah. I mean, again, it was never the intention. It was more like, we just spent the last 5 years helping all these companies grow.
Yeah.
and this is a giant, you know, baseball bat to their, you know, existence. Mm-hmm. And so how can we, like, what do we do? It was less about seeing an opportunity, and it was more about being very afraid of the potential negatives and saying, yeah. Okay, how can we intervene here? And it became an opportunity. And I always say to my clients, I was like, I'm a brand strategist, you know, and I always say to my clients, like, when you know what you give a shit about, mm-hmm. it's very obvious what you should do. And it wasn't a question. It was just like, oh, we need to do this. Mm-hmm. And we just started, you know, we didn't have a plan. We didn't have anything. We were just like, we're going to be on tomorrow morning at 7 a.m.
Yeah.
And there were 30 people with us, you know, and they were like, everyone was like deer in the headlights. And they were like, what do we do? And I was like, I don't actually know, but here are my thoughts. And then we just sort of got into it.
Yeah.
But that's what branding is, right? Is it good branding makes decision-making a lot easier, because mm-hmm. it's clear. This is what I care about. This is probably what I should do.
Yeah. And then
the business, you know, that takes care of itself. If you do mm-hmm. those things, I find.
Yeah. Do you still do that with like your local chamber of commerce, where you do like workshops and that sort of thing?
We do a little bit of that. Yeah. You know, it's, I don't know. No, we don't really do much. We do a little bit.
Yeah.
We wrap the boot camp. Once things really stabilized, we did, I think, about 100 and I remember, I think it was 110 or 111, like we ended up calling them episodes because it was every day and it was an hour. Mm-hmm. So we did over 100 of those, and it got to the point where things were stable enough, and it was like, okay, everyone's kind of safe and sound here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's still risky, but you know, we don't need to be doing this on a daily or even like 2 or 3 times a week. So mm-hmm. We sort of stepped back from that, and we kind of went back into that focusing on just doing the work well, with, you know, a bit more awareness about us at that point. And so it's kind of been like that, you know. And yeah, businesses, yeah, several clients I can point to that's that came because of all that stuff, but it was, you know,
that wasn't your motivating driver, but no, it was just a benefit after the
motivating driver. The motivating driver was to show up authentically. This is what this is who we are. This is what we care about. You're terrified about losing your business and we're terrified with you. So let's help. That's what we're about, right? So it was a no-brainer, really.
Yeah. So interesting. And then, so obviously, you know, COVID was a huge challenge that so many businesses had to overcome. Are there any other, you know, big challenges that you've had to overcome as you've grown your agency?
Yeah. Oh my God. Well, yes. I mean, I'm sure that anyone you've interviewed and asked that question to has got like 50 things that they had to,
a lot of material.
Yeah. You know, I think as a business owner, there's just the larger you get, the more lonely it is, because there's a whole bunch of people working with you, ideally, who all are kind of on the same team and they all can relate. And then there's you who is part of that team, but kind of not. And you got to hold people accountable. And so from an emotional standpoint, the relationships there, that's been challenging, is to sort of navigate from going from, I mean, at the start of the pandemic, there were 4 of us. Now there are 10 full time and there are, you know, a handful of part timers as well who bring tons of value. So that's been hard, is to sort of just navigate going from a very small team to what is for me a large team. Now there are folks out there mentioned 500 people or 1,000. So what do I know? But for me, it was tough. Another thing that was tough is we bootstrapped everything. We didn't get any money. It was just everything we made went right back into the company. And so I remember our director, Nathan, started, and it was about an 8-month process to get him a MacBook. And it was like, we just worked at it, and he had this old crappy computer and he was just making it work and whatever. And then finally one day it was like, here's your MacBook. And then we had a person start like 6 months ago, and before they showed up, their computer was here, you know, it's like, you know, it was just a little indicator, like, oh, we're a real company now. Like, we've got enough cash flow to be just like, do this stuff.
Yeah.
But certainly early on, it was making something out of nothing. You know, how do we make this work? You know? And so we cohabitated with another company to give us a physical legitimacy of an office space with meeting rooms and that sort of stuff. So that was a good problem solved, but, I think, you know, if I try to think, okay, what has been sort of the biggest challenge that we've overcome? I think it's just sort of making an amends with the speed at which our industry changes and our inability to know everything. You know, like, you never want to give someone bad advice. I'd rather just say, I don't know. And the fear of like, man, is it going to be, I don't know about everything, because things are changing so much so quickly. And then I think that just sort of overcoming that is making amends, you know, just sort of arriving at a place where you realize what your value is and becoming comfortable with that and actually charging what you ought to charge for that. Those were all like little things that, you know, were big things. You know, when we started, we built at $55 an hour, which is just nothing, right? That's very, very low. And then I remember when we decided to go to 75. And then I really remember going to 95, because it was just like sick to my stomach, and those were hard things, you know. But but you know, the focus when you're doing all those things is, where am I trying to get to? And those things were all required. So it's when you, I have another colleague or mentor that always says, like, you know, knowing where you're going gets you there. And that's just such a big part of it. It's just like, here's where we're trying to go. Okay, then I got to make this choice. I got to do this. I have to. So that's been helpful, I guess.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And then, so how do you, you know, maintain happy clients who are going to, you know, just have that loyalty to you, and then also hopefully, you know, bring in referrals as well?
Yeah. my God, I'm just laughing because it's such a gong show. that's such a hard thing to do, you know?
Yeah.
I think every part of an agency would give you a different answer. Accounts would be like, expectations management. It's all about expectations management and like manage their expectations so that they're always happy, you know?
That is huge.
Yeah. And it's big, right? You got to, and I would agree with that. The creative team would say, give them the best creative ever, you know, and they'll love us forever because the creative, and they don't understand what it's like to be in accounts where nobody, you know, it's the creative is
it's all about the communication.
Yeah, the creative is irrelevant because it's 3 weeks late. You know, like I'm sure anyone listening who's would understand what that's like, right? Like, yeah, that looks amazing, and the sale was 2 weeks ago. So,
yeah,
thanks for nothing. So you know, I think that different parts of the business, you know, would say different thing. It's always a combination. But I tell you, that what I have come to understand, which is ironic because I'm talking the vast majority of this conversation, I'm the one talking. But in normal scenarios, it's the opposite. I listen and I ask questions to understand. And apparently, I didn't know this, but apparently that's not the norm. Most folks you're sitting down with have sat down with marketers before and have been underwhelmed because they were not heard.
Right.
And, you know, it's amazing what listening will do. And I did not know this. I know this now because I've asked customers what makes us different. I've talked to, or clients have come out and just said this to me, or mentors or whatnot. And the number one consistent thing that we hear is you really listened. You actually heard what we were saying and took it to heart. And to me, it's like, isn't that the whole point? But, you know, apparently it's not, you know, apparently people kind of listen and they have these big ideas in their mind. They're like, oh yeah, this will go. But I just can't say enough about just genuinely listen. If you genuinely listen, you will do a better job of managing the client's expectations. Mm-hmm. If you genuinely listen and ask questions that are designed to understand, you're going to create, you know, you're going to arrive at better insights, which is going to give you better creative.
You know? Yeah.
It's, it's that old, I don't know if it's old or not, but that idea that like spend 90% of your time thinking about the problem and then the solutions will be obvious. And so we spend a lot of our time listening, trying to ask questions, trying to understand what they're really facing. And then from time to time, we'll come with a solution that they were never thinking about, but it's exactly what they need, right? So it's, I think that's a big part of like getting into good relationships. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I always tell people like never miss an opportunity to say you were sorry. Or say sorry, not say you're sorry. Obviously say you're sorry when you're wrong. So never miss an opportunity to say you were wrong and go apologize. Now, if you have a difficult time connecting with people, then that's probably not a strategy for you. but if you're at all good at like connecting with people, I'm sorry and I was wrong is a very, those are two very powerful statements. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I'm wrong all the time. So what I always say is let's be wrong on a small scale. Let's be wrong about small things so that we can crush the big things. You know, like let's be wrong 15 times in a row tiny so that we can nail it on the 16th. And so the clients usually get that. And when there's big mistakes, you just kind of own them. Say, yeah, we screwed this up. And it's expensive sometimes and you got to pay. You got to say, yeah, we'll cover that cost. We'll do, you know, whatever it takes. And I have found that that strengthens the relationship. It doesn't, it doesn't weaken it. It strengthens it. Done well, it strengthens it. And it's, so, you know, we've made mistakes with all of our clients. So you were asking like, how do you keep them? And, you know, that's a huge part of it is listening, acknowledging when you've screwed up, doing it genuinely and, you know, show evidence that you're thinking about their success. Their, you know, like, so they want to have a, you know, a really good click through rate on their next campaign. Well, why? What's that going to do for them? Like, what does that success mean?
Yeah.
When you understand that at a deeper level, then you can suggest to them better ways to achieve that. And you can also talk about when you're showing them what you've done and why, you can connect it back to that.
Mm-hmm. And then exactly. Yeah. And you're able to connect so many, when you ask so many different questions and you're listening, you're just able to tie it all together into a neat little package at the end.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And the clients want more of that. Because apparently it's rare.
No, I love that. And I love also, you know, because, yeah, like everyone's going to mess up from time to time. Just owning that, not making excuses for it, I think is such a great way to just build an authentic relationship because people respect that a lot more than dishonesty and not even acknowledging it. And then also just not owning it at the same time.
Yeah, no, completely. Completely. I always say like when we make mistakes here, I'm like, okay, great. Like, so we've clarified that we made a mistake. Okay, good. Now we made a mistake. Now we know what to do.
You know, yeah.
It can be difficult though within teams to have people just admit that. You know, so one of the challenges that we face is how do we create an environment here where people are comfortable, you know, admitting and owning a mistake. It's easy when it's just me or maybe one or two other people, but as we grow, mistakes can be hidden. And we're trying to create a culture where people wouldn't dream of hiding a mistake.
Right.
And that's hard, actually. That's another thing that's actually been challenging, is getting people to understand that.
Yeah, absolutely. So where do you see this as marketing in 5 years' time?
Yeah, it's a good question. That's the question. we didn't start the company to, it wasn't like, we're going to have 50 employees and we're going to do these things. It was never the intent. The intent was to create jobs, 1,000%. So, our little internal goal is to create 1,000 quality, sustainable jobs in Atlantic Canada. Obviously, we're not trying to employ 1,000 people ourselves. We want to help our clients grow, and in their growth, they employ. So we're over 100 now, we've created since starting. And my hope is that it's exponential curve, right? So as we go along here, we'll start to see some jumps every year. The first few years, one or two jobs was a win. Now it's like 10, 15 jobs, right? So I just firmly believe that marketing can deliver that, right? Like if that's one of your goals, you can get there. So for me, I'd love to see a scenario where, within 5 years, we are seen as experts in the Atlantic Canadian economy, experts in understanding how to go from micro to small, or from small to less small. Mm-hmm. The whole small business, I think the way we categorize small business in this country is really ineffective. It's super disservice to like the complexity and all the different segments within the small business community.
Yeah, very
and
true.
And there's a ton of complexity about how do you move from one segment to the next, right? Like how do you go from having no employees to one? And then how do you go from one to two and then two to five? And like the complexities that come along with that, well, they all get lumped into small business. So the small business owner with one employee is facing very different challenges than the small business owner with 10. And how do we serve them well? And how do we be known as the people who know how to do that? That to me is a big part of the next 5 years. And another part of it is, comparatively, certainly to Ontario, Atlantic Canada is a very cost-effective place to get your marketing done.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just less expensive here. Everything's less expensive here. We have a studio here. You can send products here. We can make product videos and we can make product shots and do all the things for a lot less expensive than it would be if you did it in Toronto.
Toronto's it's a very good point. Yep.
Toronto's amazing. Toronto's a great spot and it's expensive. Atlantic Canada's getting more expensive. Certainly immigration's been great. Things are getting a bit pricier, but there's work throughout the Caribbean, a lot of work throughout the Caribbean that gets done in Miami. That is way more expensive to do there than it would be to do in Atlantic Canada. So trying to bring some of that Caribbean business to Nova Scotia. It's already being done well by a company called Verb, Verb Interactive, I believe, who I don't know who their owner is, but they'd probably be a great guest here. But they do a lot of stuff throughout the Caribbean, and I think we want to play a little bit more there as well. Not to their extent, but there's definitely some opportunity there as well. Yeah. So that's the hope. That's the big goal in the long run.
Yeah, no, I love that goal of wanting to create 1,000 local jobs in Atlantic Canada by just, helping the businesses that you serve, just helping them to grow and hire more employees. It's so cool.
Yeah. I should just take a quick minute to put this in context. I don't ever want to miss an opportunity to speak to Canadians about the plight of Atlantic Canadians. So let me just clarify. Canadians love Atlantic Canada. We know that.
Yes.
Which is great. But there's this thing that happens where Atlantic Canadians grow up in Atlantic Canada and then they move away for work. So it's there are two times in someone's life when they're very expensive, and it's when they're young and it's when they're old. So if you think of the taxes it takes to run a school system, for instance, or children's hospitals and that type of stuff, it's very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And then when someone becomes a senior citizen, they become very expensive as well. And Nova Scotia and Atlantic Canada generally that's what we're full of, young people and old people, and people who like spent their career working in Calgary and now they get to retire and move to Nova Scotia, which is very nice, except that they're about to enter their most expensive years in terms of healthcare.
Right.
So this is when I say, Atlantic Canada is doomed by demographics. This is what we mean, is that like everyone loves it here, but they want to work their core earning years elsewhere.
And
or they're forced to, right? So what we have is this sort of hollowed out portion of someone's life when they should be here paying taxes, helping contribute to the society, where they actually move to Toronto or they move to Calgary, or they move to this, you know, New York or wherever, have great careers and then move home. So that's what I mean by that is we're doing by demographics. So that's why it's such a focus for us to focus on the Atlantic Canadian economy and make it more sustainable. And again, that's why immigration is so key for Atlantic Canada.
Yeah.
Sorry, Canadians. I just couldn't miss an opportunity to,
to point that out. We're
up against, yeah.
Yeah, it's something I've never thought about, to be honest, but it's such an interesting point. So, and I love that it's something that you've identified and you're just, you know, working to try and support that issue.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to do something every day. You
yeah.
know? Like, we're not at all, like, I always laugh here, you know, if McDonald's walked in the door and said, hey, we need an agency, we'd say, okay, here are five great options for you. Like, we would not be trying to get that work because it's not what we're trying to do.
Not in alignment with, like, your values.
Not at all. And my God, I love a quarter pounder with cheese, don't get me wrong. It's not like a slight against McDonald's, but it's just not a fit, right? Like, they don't, the vast majority of their shareholders are not in Atlantic Canada. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. I love it. All right. Well, we are getting ready to move on to the fast five now. So I have five rapid fire questions for you.
Okay. Now these are rapid fire questions that I can kind of take my time to answer.
They are rapid fire questions that no one answers in a rapid fire format. So feel free to have your creative freedom.
Right on.
So what's a book you've read that's made an impact on you?
Okay. So, I should say the book, one of the books that ever made an impact on me was This is Marketing by Seth Godin. And it made an impact on me because it totally screwed my SEO. I started this company before he wrote that book. And about a year after I started this company, he wrote that book. And when you Google my company, what you find is a book by Seth Godin. So that book impacted me greatly. You know, we weren't dying on SEO, so it doesn't really matter, but it's kind of a fun thing. It's a great book, by the way, but no, we didn't name our company after Seth Godin's book. We named it This is Marketing because we work with a lot of smaller companies and they often stress and overthink about marketing. So when we talk to them about it, we say, listen, this is marketing. This is not rocket science, you know? Yes. And it just puts them at ease, right? So that's the name. That's where it came from. So that's the business answer. On a personal level, the book that made the most impact on me was probably 9/11 by Noam Chomsky. You know, Chomsky's obviously a divisive figure for lots of reasons, and I think that's fair, but he's definitely an interesting intellectual. And that book really peeled back and spoke differently to what was happening in the media at that point. He had a really honest take on why 9/11 happened that made a lot of sense to me. And,
interesting.
And I read it at a young age. I think I'd have been in grade 11, I want to say. So it made an impact on me and just sort of shaped the way that I view media. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist by any means. I love CBC. Huge CBC fan, all that stuff. But I am it did change the way I looked at media. So there's your long answer to a short question.
Yeah. Awesome. And then what does your morning routine look like?
Whatever my kids have in store for me each morning at this point.
they control your morning.
They do. Yeah. I know that for like a lot of CEOs, they're like, oh, I get up at 5 and I do this and I do that. And I used to be like that. I used to be like up early. I love public transit. So I'd always try to take the bus and then take the ferry over to the office and whatnot. But since we had kids, you know, it's I kind of just gave up on all that, honestly, because they're going to be kids for such a short period of time that, like, you know, I can do my morning hustle stuff later, you know, when the kids are a little bit older and they don't want to talk to me anyway. So in this, you know, 7 or 8 year window when they actually give a darn and want to say hi, I try to just be there in the morning. So morning is the bus comes at 8:04 and then we take Baker to daycare. We're usually at the office for about 8:45.
No, it's so true. And I do the same. I can, you know, if I let it, I can be a total workaholic, but no, I'm like, they're only little for, you know, so long. So you never want to run into that situation where you just regret, you know, that you didn't take the time and spend it with them. So I think it's so important to just be conscious and enjoy that time with them.
Yeah. You know, like you're never going to get it back.
It's
just a one shot thing. Right.
So exactly.
It's hard though. Like, do you find you feel guilty or do you get any pressures when people are looking at you saying, well, why aren't you like doing the 5 a.m. thing? Or like, do you ever deal with that?
Yeah. I feel like there's guilt on both sides. It's like guilt, like you're not putting into the business. And then there's guilt, like not spending enough time with the kids. Mm. And yeah, I think it's definitely something that can kind of take over if you let it. But I've just come to the point where I'm like, I can only do the best I can do.
Right.
And yeah, yeah, I just do that and be at peace with it. But I've definitely felt both of those emotions.
Yeah, that's good. So I'm not alone in that. That's good to know.
No. So is there a CEO that you follow or study?
Yeah. You know, I have a variety of mentors that I work with. And so those are the ones that I kind of look to. There's a gentleman on the East Coast here named Matt Sims. He owns a company called Simplicity mm-hmm. Designs. They do organizational structure management and change, and butchering what he does. Sorry, Matt, if you're listening. he's a guy who, again, he's up at 5 a.m. got to go for my jog and all that stuff. So he and I've chatted about that before, but he's a person who is really helpful in framing up, you know, what's actually important. Mm-hmm. You know, he talks a lot about how, you know, it's innovation or die, and you know, any organization standing still is actually regressing, and he's got a whole, you know, perspective on that I really identify with. So it's,
yeah.
I had a mentor a number of years tell me, he said, never, you know, align yourself with someone who, like, if you saw their name on your phone, there might be a situation where you don't want to pick it up. Mm-hmm. He said, listen to the type of people that if they called you, you'd always answer. And
yeah.
That has served me very well. You know, I've had instances where I could sort of listen to someone and hear them, you know, and be inspired or whatever. But when I think about it, I'm like, if this person called me, would I want to answer it? And if it's no, then I usually don't listen to their advice.
Yeah.
Another thing I always say to folks, because people love to give advice. And when I'm talking to business owners, often they're like, well, so-and-so said this, so-and-so said this, and so, and they'll be conflicted. Who do I listen to? What do I do? And I always say, well, you know, if it's apples against apples, or if you're just sort of trying to decide, go with the advice from the person who asked you the most questions first before they spoke. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's amazing the amount of people that will start giving you advice without asking you any questions.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, if someone's not asking me questions, then I just kind of ignore their advice, because what's the point? But so Matt Sims is a big CEO that I follow. You know, there's like the Richard Bransons of the world, all those folks, and I guess I follow them to some degree. Like, I see them on social media, but I don't like sort of live by it.
Yeah.
The person this is ironic, he's in the room right beside me, is a fellow by the name of Tara Kadad. He's the CEO of Peace by Chocolate, which is a chocolate company here in Nova Scotia. He inspires me. He just turned 30, so he's younger than me. I'm 37.
Cool.
Yeah, but he's a new Syrian Canadian, Syrian refugee. And anytime when I'm feeling overwhelmed, stressed, frustrated, those sorts of things, I do think of Tarek, because mm-hmm. he's dealing with all kinds of complexity himself, and he went through hell to even have the privilege to go through all that crap. And it helps reframe it for me. Be like, okay, that thing you're stressed about, is your house being bombed? No? Okay. Well, maybe you're okay. You know, it sort of helps really reframe it. So I'm a big believer in reframing things.
Yes, you know, I love that.
Get out of a bad mindset and into a good one.
Yeah, so. Put things in perspective. It could always be worse.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And what is your favorite online tool?
My favorite online tool. Oh, my God. Favorite in terms of I enjoy it or I use it, I suppose, is a distinction.
It could be.
I should have asked you before. My favorite online tool. This is going to sound stupid, maybe, I don't know, but I have a love-hate relationship with social media. I'm not like a big social media person. I don't have thousands of followers or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you argue against something that keeps you in touch with everyone you know instantly? Like, it's a nice thing to have. Like, if I was born 25 years earlier or 10, 15 years earlier, frankly, like, the people I went to high school with, I wouldn't know now.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
so true.
Time has passed, and a lot of them I know. I was just in my hometown on the weekend, and I ran into someone I probably haven't seen since high school But I was able to, A, remember his name and know a little bit about what's going on in his life. And we were able to connect. And now we're going to get together next time I'm in town. And, but that would never would have happened without like Facebook and Instagram. So yeah. It's a weird answer because I actually hate what those platforms are doing to society. But in my own little world, it's kind of a very useful tool, you know?
Yeah. I think social media is one of those things in moderation.
Yeah.
It's an incredible tool. It can definitely have its dark side and it can, you know, addictive and can get a little bit out of control. But yeah, there's definitely so many benefits to it.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other one I would say would be Asana, which is a project manager.
That's a good one.
Yeah. I said my team would laugh in hysterics that I even said that because I'm the least user of it in the office. I don't follow rules well. Like I'm unconventional. So being put in a project management software is really constraining for me. But I've just, it's impossible to argue the efficiencies that it provides. It's just so effective that, you know, our business runs a lot smoother when I'm using it. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
There you go, Asana. There's your ad.
There you go. We get a lot of Asana plugs on here. Awesome. And then, so last question, what's one thing you wish you had known when you began your career?
When I began my career. I think it was never clear to me the degree to which the average person, like their interpretation of what marketing is, how much that would impact my life. One, because like, people look at marketing a certain way, you know, like, some people don't like marketers at all. They think that, you know, we manipulate and in a lot of instances we do. Right. So there's a sort of a cultural dislike of the profession that I really kind of didn't know about to start. Mm-hmm. So that's something I kind of wish I understood a bit better. But the bigger part of that, and probably the part that's more of a thing I wish I had understood, is that like everyone, you know, when you're, you know, when you go to a movie and there's like three or four trailers, well, for 10 minutes, everyone in the theater is a movie critic, right? They get to be, oh, I'm not going to go see that. Oh, I'll go see that. That looks good. And marketing is kind of like that. Like everyone gets to be a critic. Everyone gets to have a say, even when they have no idea what they're talking about or what the strategy was or any of the things behind it, right? And the degree to which that sort of thinking impacts our day-to-day life here in the company is shockingly high, you know, because you're always trying to overcome, you know, what someone's niece said, or, you know, I showed this to my neighbor and they don't like it. And you're just like, well, what does your neighbor do? Oh, he's an engineer. It's like, okay, well, you know, and that just manifests itself so many times. There's an acceptance that like anyone could do this, when in reality, that is definitely not the case. And as marketers, we all know that, right? But every day having to overcome that is super annoying. If I could go back in time and tell myself that, I might, you know, I might be better off for having known it. But, you know, it's a small price to pay to be able to shape the way people think and feel about things. You know, you kind of have to put up with that annoyance, and I guess it's just part of the deal.
Yeah. Put those processes in place when you've got those, you know, recurring issues of how you're going to respond to that in a tactful way.
Yeah, you know, and I've experienced that because we work with a lot of small companies and some medium-sized companies. But before I started the agency, I worked at another agency and we worked with big files and it was the exact same. Mm-hmm. You know, here's $1 million file and it's still like my grandson didn't like it. It's like, it's prevalent. It's always there. Which, you know, when you're a brain surgeon, nobody questions that. Or when you're doing even like roofing or something, nobody says, well, did you put the shingles on the way I saw on YouTube? Nobody asks that question. But in our world, everything we do is up for debate and can be critiqued and everyone always knows better. So like people always ask me to give my opinion on other people's advertising. And I just say no. I say, if you can show me the brief, you know, and show me the strategy, then I can pass judgment. But until I can see those things, I just keep my mouth shut. Now, if I think it's bad, though, I might reach out to the owner of the company and say, hey, you want to have a chat?
And there you go.
But I won't comment on it. I'll just say, hi, how you doing? Because my guess is, you know, it's not really providing results for them. So But it's shocking how often people want you to trash other people's marketing. And it's just like, it's just not fair. It's so unfair. Yeah.
Well, it speaks to your character. You know, you got to stand by, you know, what you believe in, what your values are. I like that.
Right on. Well, thanks for having me on here. This was fun.
Neil, it was such a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for joining me. And if anyone would like to reach out to you, what is the best way that they can get in touch with you?
Yeah. Well, thanks to Seth Godin, you can't go to This Is Marketing on Instagram, but you can go to Brands by Tim on Instagram and just DM us. Tim being an acronym for This Is Marketing. Or you can just email me, neil@thisismarketing.ca. And that's the one that I get at 3 a.m. and check. So feel free to email me.
Awesome. Well, thanks again.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Agency Toolkit. We hope you've learned something new that you can implement into your agency today. If you liked this episode, please subscribe to our podcast and we'll see you next time.